Hi, and welcome to Intern Ready OBGYN, a podcast aimed at helping you excel during your intern year in OBGYN. My name is Dr. Lucy Brown. I'm a resident at Johns Hopkins and your host for Intern Ready OBGYN. Hello, and welcome back to Intern Ready. I'm Dr. Lucy Brown, and today I'm lucky to be joined by Dr. Aria Fawn. We're going to be talking about your first triage visit. So it's day one of intern year. You have your first triage patient that comes in. So before you even go in the room, what are you going to do? Where do you start?
I remember being very, very nervous about this my intern year, and I was lucky enough to start at the community hospital, which, you know, helped sort of alleviate some of my concerns about a pop-in triage, so to speak. But the steps kind of remain the same regardless of where you are. I think the most important first step is kind of gathering whatever collateral information you do know about the patient from the chart. So looking into her history, her age, her parity, how far along she is in this pregnancy, what medical conditions she lives with, and what OB conditions she's been diagnosed with in this pregnancy.
Yeah. And definitely, like, oftentimes, like, people are coming in with their chronic conditions that are just, like, enhanced by pregnancy or exacerbated by pregnancy.
Yeah, for sure. Like asthma.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's also important to always just confirm a patient's dating with your own eyes, because it is not uncommon that patients have to be redated, so to speak, in triage. And you'll definitely get the hang of this as you're going intern year, but that's just something to keep in the back of your mind.
Yeah, forming good habits early.
Yeah, exactly. And then one other thing, just like with that first chart dive, is checking to see if you can offer any of their routine prenatal care things for them while they're there. If they're past 36 weeks and their next appointment isn't for several days, you can ask if you can collect their GBS swab for them, that kind of thing, just to sort of keep them on track for their pregnancy overall.
And this may be like their only interaction with healthcare is like the labor and delivery triage.
Yes. Yeah, that's huge. And that's an opportunity for us to kind of deliver that comprehensive care for patients like that.
For sure. So you've done your chart review. You've learned like kind of the basics of this patient. And then what next?
Next, the thing that I personally like to do, and I think people have a different order of things, but is to just start a note, pull in a template that you'll probably get from your seniors and your chiefs and whatnot, and just jot down the quick things that you want to, you know, make sure that you ask about, the quick things that you want to assess for, and then have that at the ready before going into the room.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And now you're ready to actually go see the patient, go to the patient's room. What do you do next?
Yeah. Now that you have this information in your head, you want to take a couple of your tools with you, so to speak. Always take an ultrasound. Doesn't really matter the gestational age. You want to make sure that you're getting a probe on the belly, making sure that there is a live pregnancy, and documenting any other sort of ultrasound findings you may need, such as a maximum vertical pocket or the AFI or anything like that.
Yeah, and if they're before, like, getting their NST, heart rate.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly, getting drop tones. And then also just taking in something to keep track of your conversation with the patient. I'm a big fan of using Epic's, like, artificial intelligence note writer called Abridge. I know that a lot of EMRs are starting to pick up on that as well. Or just like old-fashioned pen and paper could be helpful, at least at the beginning, just to kind of help keep track of the discussion that you're having. And then depending on the chief complaint, you know, if they're coming in for upper respiratory infection symptoms, you can also take your stethoscope, your mask, all of those things. And to review, back, you know, from your third-year clerkship, an NST stands for a non-stress test. From the age of viability to 28 weeks, what you're looking for is just a reassuring tracing. No prolonged decelerations, no significant tachycardia, bradycardia, those sort of things. And then from 28 to 32 weeks, you're looking for a reassuring tracing, but also some sort of reactivity. You want accelerations in the fetal heart rate that rise above the baseline for at least 10 beats per minute and lasts at least 10 seconds long. You want two of those within a 20-minute period. And then after 32 weeks, throughout the rest of pregnancy, you want the same sort of thing, except it's 15 an acceleration of 15 beats per minute from the baseline lasting for 15 seconds or more. Then you're going to move into getting a little bit more information from the patient themselves, right? Like, why are they here with us? What information can they kind of help provide to give us a better story of their symptoms? When did it start? What has helped? What hasn't helped? What are they most concerned about? And then doing a focused physical exam. We are by no means doing, you know, a head-to-toe exam for every patient who's going to come into triage. If they're coming in for an MSK complaint, I don't need to be listening to their heart and lungs necessarily. But if I notice that they're cyanotic, that might be a reason why I want to listen to their heart and lungs. And then performing a physical, or excuse me, performing a pelvic exam if and when it's indicated. If they're coming in for an OB complaint, such as contractions, leakage of fluid, vaginal bleeding, abnormal vaginal discharge, those sort of things warrant a pelvic exam, plus or minus a wet prep or plus or minus STI testing. As long as you discuss that with the patient and, you know, offer one based on your recommendation for a pelvic exam and they are consenting to it, then it's important for you to perform that as well.
Yeah, I feel like all the baseline physical exams that we learned in medical school, you still will apply in certain scenarios. So your abdominal exam, looking for rebound tenderness, looking for guarding. Your neurologic exam comes in handy, like not uncommonly with patients with headaches or like vision changes. And so we do that pretty often.
Quite often, yeah.
So what are some of the most common chief complaints that an intern will see?
Yeah. Well, there are a number of them. I think starting off very broad is just abdominal pain. Throughout the three trimesters of pregnancy, folks can come in with all sorts of pain. Sometimes it can be a slam dunk, you know, description of labor contractions, right? And so ruling out labor, ruling out preterm labor, depending on their gestational age, will be important to start off with. And then offering a cervical exam in that setting to help rule those things out. Other generalized abdominal pain that is non-obstetric related is also important to kind of discern what body system or organ system it's coming from.
And certainly their vitals, like if they have high blood pressure, and then we're thinking about more scary things like help. That's the big one.
Definitely. Flank pain, things like that. Lots of blood on their UA. Think about kidney stones. It just, abdominal pain, it's had so many things could be causing it. So it's important to narrow it down.
And be systematic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. The other thing I think we probably see the most is like some sort of leakage of fluid, vaginal discharge. I think even if it's not the primary presenting symptom that they have, it's often like an additional one that they report as you're asking questions. And so I often will offer a wet prep to folks if they're having any kind of change in discharge from baseline. And then the big things that you're looking for under a slide, ideally with KOH, is going to be those, you know, motile flagella that indicate trichomonas or pseudohyphae or budding yeast concerning for candidiasis, and then clue cells greater than 20% of the slide that would indicate bacterial vaginosis. And then, of course, you know, if it is more of a convincing picture for spontaneous rupture of membranes or SHRM, you want to do the full evaluation for that. Speculum exam to check for pooling, nitrazine swab to check for acidity, as well as looking under a microscope on a dry slide. No saline, no KOH prep, and like really letting it dry out for a good 5 to 10 minutes to look for ferning.
I know for sure that I've looked at ferning slides too early, and sometimes you get false negatives. So you do, you should wait a little bit of time.
Definitely.
Right. What else?
I think probably another really common one that you'll get is rule out preeclampsia. Rule out any form of pregnancy-induced hypertension, whether it's somebody who has a known diagnosis of chronic or gestational hypertension or somebody who just had an isolated mild range in clinic and is coming in for labs, an NST, an ultrasound, and blood pressure monitoring. Those are one of the bread and butter triage presentations you'll get. The labs that are important there is going to be your CBC to really look at your hemoglobin and your platelets, your CMP to look at your creatinine and liver function tests, and a urine protein to creatinine ratio. Those things will help rule in a patient for a PAIH diagnosis, but most importantly is monitoring those blood pressures. Mm-hmm. Moving on to another common presenting symptom is vaginal bleeding or spotting. You know, this is definitely one that you don't want to miss anything big. And it's really important to know a patient's history prior to evaluating them, because if they have something like a placenta previa or a vesa previa, you don't want to go in there with a speculum exam and immediately follow with a digital exam, right? Because those patients are patients who should not be getting a digital exam. But, you know, if you look in their chart and it's early gestation and they have a known subchorionic hematoma, then okay, great. You can be reasonably assured, like I have a potential etiology for this. Still rule out the big, bad, scary things, but that is just something to keep in mind. As for urinary symptoms, patients will often, you know, describe that suprapubic pressure, that burning sensation with urinating. And it's really important in those cases, even if they don't have those symptoms, but have a urinalysis concerning for a UTI, to assess their CVA tenderness, because pyelonephritis can be quite scary in pregnancy and increases their chances of really morbid outcomes, including ARDS and preterm labor.
Yeah, for sure. And even if they, you know, if the UA is like equivocal, you do want to just empirically treat anybody with UTI symptoms in pregnancy because it increases their risk of preterm labor.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Headaches are another big doozy that'll come in through your door. We already kind of talked about working it up with the PIH spectrum, but even without it, just, you know, kind of assessing what kind of headache it is, if they have a history of chronic headaches, what usually works for them, and then giving them some sort of cocktail, so to speak, to help alleviate their symptoms and triage, and then sending them home with those same meds so that they're able to self-treat and come back in if their headaches become refractory to medication. And I think a big one there, kind of going back to what you were saying, Lucy, is that this is a time where you might want to do a neurologic exam, depending on what concurrent symptoms a patient has with this sort of headache. And oftentimes neurology has to be consulted because we've kind of exhausted our obstetric tools, so to speak, in managing the headache.
I do feel like, you know, we see headache all the time in pregnancy, and it's very often benign, especially if they have a history of migraines, but it is like you do want to work it up and be very thorough, because pregnancy is a hypercoagulable state. So you are at increased risk of stroke. You are at increased risk of seizures with preeclampsia. And so being like, you know, thinking about all the scary scenarios as well, and not just, you know,
your everyday headache.
Exactly. Your everyday headache.
No, definitely. Nausea, vomiting, whew, that's another big one. And I'll kind of throw hyperemesis gravidarum into that one as well. And just remembering the diagnostic criteria for that, you know, like a recent weight loss of 5% or more, ketonuria, and like inability to tolerate PO intake are typically the big ones that you're looking for. And trying to, similarly to a headache, find the right cocktail, the right blend of medications that really help this patient. Just keeping in term or keeping in mind their comorbidities, if they have long QT syndrome, or if they're before 12 weeks and wanting to avoid certain antiemetics in those cases as well.
Yeah, definitely.
And then a last one, and this one is maybe more seasonal, but upper respiratory symptoms, you know, coughing, itchy nose, runny nose, that kind of thing, chest pain related to coughing, all of those can present in different ways, especially those moms who have, or patients who have young kids at home and are at daycare, which we all know is a petri dish, like just trying to rule out any of the regular viruses and whatnot, and giving them supportive management for that.
For sure. All right. That's a really excellent comprehensive list of our like most common triage visits. And you're certainly going to see other chief concerns as well. But I feel like this is the good bread and butter.
Definitely.
So you've seen your patient, you've done your physical, you have all your information. How are you going to staff this with the attending?
Yeah. So, you know, I think that before you go talk to the attending or your chief resident or whoever it is that you are staffing with. You want to gather all your data. If you're still waiting on a couple of swabs to come back that you know will take a longer time, then that's fine to sort of include that in your presentation as a pending result. Mm-hmm. But the things that you do have control over, the NST and the ferning on the slide and things like that, try to have all that ready to go.
Pelvic exam.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then you're just going to follow the same standard SOAP method that you learned in medical school with some like slight changes. So, of course, your one-liner is important, including an age, a parity, a gestational age, and their chief complaint. Why is the patient here? You know, what is their story? All the subjective information. Next is going to be your objective data, their vitals in triage, your physical exam, including your pelvic exam, whether you did a cervical exam or not. And then any labs that we got, any EKGs or swabs or things like that that are possibly pending. If, you know, her workup requires longer, a longer stay, is it going to be an overnight observation for like after an MVA and mm-hmm. she needs 23-hour obs? Or is she going to be a long-term antepartum admission, somebody who's diagnosed with superimposed preeclampsia at 30 weeks, you know, and is going to have to be there for the next month? All of those questions are important questions to ask. Or even like, is this going to be admission, but not under OB? Does this patient need to go to the medicine service or the mm-hmm. General surgery service for a cholecystectomy? Just trying to kind of include that in your plan as a part of her disposition.
Yeah. And I feel like oftentimes as an intern, you're going to be following this SOAP format. Mm-hmm. And it's a really important way to organize your thoughts and your information.
Yeah.
But if there is something in the patient's like findings that is concerning, mm-hmm. don't bury the lead. Like
yeah,
I would go ahead and like start with that. If you're worried about them, if you're like, oh, she's 10 centimeters, you know, like start with that. Or if she has a blood pressure of 180
yeah.
over like 100, like start with that.
Right.
And then go into your SOAP. Don't bury the lead like too, if you're very concerned about somebody.
Yes, that's a really, really good point. Which I think the like default as an intern is almost to bury the lead because we just want to be very regimented about our presentation. But you're right. Like if there is something that we want the attending or our chief to know right away, start off with that. And then you can add the collateral information.
Yeah.
And if your plan that you pitch isn't 100% right, you know, that's okay because you are a learner and as medical professionals, we are forever learners. Mm-hmm. And it is okay to give a wrong suggestion because then you learn from it. And that suggestion might actually be right, but for a different presentation, a different patient, a different symptom, that sort of thing.
Right. So it's all learning.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
All right. So you have come up with your plan. You've staffed it with your attending. How are you going to close the loop with the patient?
Yeah. I think that staying really vigilant about updating the patient and communicating the plan with the patient, either directly or indirectly through the triage nurse, if you are having a particularly busy triage day is important.
Mm-hmm.
So that they know you haven't forgotten about them, that you are still working them up for whatever they need, or you're getting ready to dispo them.
And then once you've done all of that, you have to document everything mm-hmm. that you've done. What is most important? What are the most important things that go into your note?
Yeah. This is the part that I feel like it took the most amount of time intern year to really get down.
Me too.
Because I wanted to be really thorough, mm-hmm, but I also wanted to be efficient.
Yeah.
I think it is important to include the major points of a patient's subjective history. And then down in your assessment section, really teasing out that differential diagnosis. Like, yes, they came in for a headache, and it is most likely just a physiologic headache of pregnancy, but here's my differential, and here are all the facts and objective mm-hmm. data that's reassuring mm-hmm. against those conditions. And then as the labs are coming back and, you know, a plan is being finalized, just update your note accordingly. A really, really big thing that I think I had to, you know, learn as an intern is that this documentation is not just for you in this one isolated time. Like, you're not documenting in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
This patient is going to be seen by OB providers later on, and we'll refer back to your triage note to see, well, oh, why did this patient go to triage? Because again, this is an emergency room, right? You want to be able to give a very thorough story as to why they were there, what we did to help, and what the recommendations were moving forward. And then just from the efficiency piece, like make your life, you know, easier by working smarter rather than harder. Use dictation devices if you have Dragon device at your institution. If you have like the same sort of like EMR AI tool that I mentioned before to make note writing faster. And then, you know, tailor your notes to the presentation because some of your senior residents might have very specific templates for each chief complaint that you see.
Once I started using Dragon, I felt like it was a really nice way to summarize, like just say it out loud, summarize like what is the one line or what is my assessment? Like this, and you can edit it later, right? Like it's not final, but like when I spoke it out loud, it actually helped me think through. Like this is a patient, she has belly pain, you know, her ultrasound was normal, her NST was normal, we're thinking this versus this versus this. Just saying it out loud and then like it honestly really helped with my note writing as well.
Yeah, for sure. No, I completely agree. And it helps your presentation style too.
For sure.
And then another tip that I would just kind of give is, you know, especially at the beginning, your first L&D block, have your chief read over your notes. It might feel like feedback overload because you'll be getting so much feedback at the beginning, but see feedback as a good thing and as a way to improve. And I'm so glad that, you know, my chief residents did that for me because I feel very comfortable about my note writing skills now because they gave me such good tips back then. And then lastly, you know, trust your gut. Know that, you know, sometimes when your spidey senses are tingling, they're tingling for a reason, and talk it out with your chiefs, talk it out with your attendings, learn about these different diagnoses, you know, recognize patterns and enjoy the process.
Yeah. And it gets easier. And then it gets harder and then it gets easier. Well, thanks so much, Ari.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Intern Ready OBGYN. We hope you found today's podcast helpful. Don't forget to subscribe below, rate the podcast, leave a review, or suggest a new episode.